listening to Gila Membres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. Welcome to New Earth Kids, a radio show featuring kids who care about their community and the environment in which they live. On this monthly show, kids of all ages talk about the challenges facing planet Earth, and we tell you how we are creating and implementing solutions. New Earth Kids is part of the Kindred Continuum series and airs on the third Monday of the month at 10 a.m. and will be replayed on the air the following Sunday at 4 p.m.
Welcome to New Earth Kids, a radio show highlighting all the great work and ideas of kids in our community. I'm your host, Nan Franzblau, and I first want to welcome my co-host and director of the New Earth Program, Carol Ann Fugali.
Hi, thank you, Nan. It's nice to be here.
Thanks, Carol Ann. Before we introduce today's guests, we'd like to recognize and thank the Upper Gila Watershed Alliance. The New Earth Program is one of the many projects that UGWA has undertaken to promote a healthy environment and community here in southwestern New Mexico. Now, let's introduce our guests. Today, we're joined by 5 ninth graders from Aldo Leopold High School who are studying environmental science and going out in the field to work on restoration projects, thus putting what they're learning into action. Aldo Leopold is a school of action that promotes experiential learning, so you guys get to do a lot outside of the classroom. So let's go around the circle, and we'd like for you to each say your name and tell us about an experience you've had here at school or out in the field that's been really meaningful for you.
My name is Keanu, and a meaningful experience for me was working with the AmeriCorps people at the Waterworks Restoration Project.
My name is Lila, and I think a unique experience I've had at Aldo is going on a sweat lodge, which was an insane experience, and it was really beneficial.
My name is Dara, and I think one of the most influential experiences for me at Aldo is the inclusivity I've always experienced. Like, I remember in middle school when we did mini villages, I immediately connected with the 8th graders, and I was a 6th grader. And ever since then, all of the grades have kind of been melted together, and I really enjoy that.
My name's Asa, and one of the most interesting experiences I've had at Aldo was going rock climbing with our class.
My name's Ivy, and one of my favorite experiences at Aldo was going on the Sonoran Sojourn. It was like a 4-day long trip around Arizona with the freshman class.
I'm jealous. Sounds like you guys have had some great experiences here. Can you first tell us, let's maybe start with you, Ivy, a little bit about what you guys are doing through your environmental science class and the restoration project you're working on?
Our environmental science class, we focus a lot on sustainability, but we don't spend a ton of time like going places. But then with the restoration projects, we get a chance to sort of implement what we've been learning in class at different sites around Grant County. So I think everyone here is part of the Waterworks restoration crew. So we've been going to the Waterworks restoration site, which is right across from Jose Barrios. And we've been planting trees and painting and repairing picnic tables.
So sustainability can be a pretty complex issue, and it's one that we use a lot when we talk about restoration and sustainable actions. And, you know, anymore, a lot of ecologists are not using the term sustainability as much as they used to, because sustainability, we need to have a base to start from, meaning that that base is where we want to be, right? And so now with all of the environmental degradation going on, a lot of people are focusing more on restoration, which is what you're doing. So we are in the age of restoration where we are getting up to the ecological integrity of where we want to be. Then we can talk about sustainability, right? And so I think that's kind of a a concept that's important for us to remember, because how can we be sustainable if we're not at the place where we want to be to begin with? So in order, you know, the restoration that you're doing is just that. You're restoring our environment to that base level where we want to continue.
Right. So how do you guys see that happening in your restoration project? What are you restoring? What are you bringing it up to?
Well, I think especially at the Waterworks site, we are focusing a lot on like the economy of Grant County and things like that. And a fun fact we learned today was that for every $1 spent towards like restoration and things like that, $9 comes back in revenue for the economy. Mm. Which that was cool. And I think we, like Carol said, that like bringing it back to the baseline level, so that, because if we just keep like having this sustainable thing, it's a very good impact, but we won't, just being sustainable isn't going to return us to what we need to be, the level we need to be at.
Yeah.
Right, because sustainability means that if you're doing something in perpetuity, that means that you can do that, you know, forever.
Right.
And but bringing up to that base level is the first step that we need to take on the road to sustainability.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned one of the UN Sustainability Development Goals, which is the economic goal. What other goals do you think are going to be met through your project?
Well, I think social, because we're taking the Waterworks and turning it into a community space. Like when we were, they're telling us about what they want their end goal to be, and we heard things like campsites for Continental Divide hikers, like picnic areas where you can go eat your lunch, and like a building where you can have events like meetings or parties, or like it'll be something that can bring the entire community together.
Yeah. Nice.
I know that part of like our midterm papers that we wrote, well, one of the prompts at the end, it asked you to sort of tie the restoration site to meeting like a specific sustainability goal. And I thought that our work at the Waterworks site addressed the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal of industry and innovation and infrastructure, because you're sort of working on all those things. So I guess like there's two types of goals. Like there's the three pillars of sustainability, which is like the economic, environmental, and social structures. But then more like the more specific goals, I guess, are
the branches within each of the pillars.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we know that the United Nations has, they have 17 sustainable development goals that you've been talking about and learning about in your classes. And these SDGs, as they call them, they're really a blueprint for peace and prosperity for people in the planet. And so did you choose to focus on certain sustainability goals on your projects, or did that just kind of emerge on its own?
I think it sort of emerged on its own. I mean, we're trying to find ways to address every like little piece of the site that we can make sustainable. For example, we're building toilets that basically human waste will be turned into fertilizer, which will then use to like grow plants, mm-hmm. and stuff around, mm-hmm. the site.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just finding those things that we can make something that would produce waste into being something sustainable, the good things like emerge from that.
Great, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's kind of how we got introduced to the class. In the beginning of the year, we talked a lot about those goals. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What else can you tell us about your work at Waterworks?
Well, I think the Waterworks restoration, part of it, you're restoring like the land. We're planting trees and native plants, but we're also sort of restoring like the building there, the Waterworks building, which was built over 100 years ago.
It was
18-something. Yeah,
18-something.
Long, long ago. But so like the first day that we worked there, Asa and I, we focused on sanding the door to the building so that we could paint it.
But we also sanded some boxes that they found inside of the waterworks building to be used again so that we don't produce any waste while we're working on the project.
That is so cool.
Great.
I love that. Restoring instead of just tearing it down and starting over again.
Yeah, I think that's something that, like, as humans, we're going to need to relearn that, like, we have what we have and we shouldn't make any more, because otherwise, I mean, it already is such a big problem. But if we, like, starting with the waterworks, if we can learn how to restore rather than generate new, I think that'll be a really big step towards stopping climate change altogether.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Do you guys want to talk about the Earth Charter that you worked on?
Well, the idea of the Earth Charter originated in 1987 when the United Nations World Commission on Environment and Development called for a new charter to guide the transition to sustainable development. So in the Earth Charter, you can read, and there are, I don't know, how many different ideas are there?
Oh, a lot.
There are a bunch of different ideas, and they're each like relating to how we can move towards
An ideal world,
yeah, how we can move towards sustainable development. And in a couple of the essays we wrote, like, I wrote down one of the ideas that really stuck with me, and that was integrate into formal education and lifelong learning the knowledge, values, and skills needed for a sustainable way of life. And I connected that. Ivy talked about this in her introduction. We went on a week-long trip to Arizona with the entire freshman class. We met with a guy named Brad, and he took us, his house in the middle of like central Tucson was completely sustainable. I mean, the way he built his roof made it so that he didn't have to use artificial cooling or heating. His water was like, he completely used what he caught from the rain. I mean, he had a compost pile, like everything. He even changed things on his street to be more sustainable, to like catch trash when it rains and catch the rain to water the trees. And I mean, it was just incredible to see how one man can make such a difference. And so it's like, what can we do as a group?
And it wasn't only just Brad, but he got his whole entire neighborhood to become like a community working towards one goal together.
Right.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought that was really cool about Brad's like neighborhood is, I guess we could say that this is the Dunbar Springs neighborhood in Tucson. I think it's pretty well known for its ideas. They have like an edible garden sort of going throughout the neighborhood. So like many, if not like most of the plants in that neighborhood, you can just like eat. So like Brad was talking about like harvesting these plants that are just like growing along his sidewalk, which is a really crazy idea.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. We're also on the web at gmcr.org. And this is New Earth Kids. And we are so grateful to have 5 ninth graders from Aldo Leopold High School with us today. We are talking about their environmental studies.
I think adding on to like neighborhood we visited earlier this year, or I guess it was late last year, the part of the Earth Charter, one of the like statements is the care for the community of life with understanding, compassion, and love. And I think what Brad did in his neighborhood was very like, he created this community for like that can understand deeper, and he gave them all opportunities, which I think we all kind of need, because it's hard to be like independent in this kind of matter, because like, are you really making a change if it's just you? And I know, like, personally, it's hard to, like, figure it out on your own. And I think working together is an incredible goal that we should all, like, work towards, because otherwise we can't do it on our own.
I think that's a really good example of, you know, in this very challenging time that we're at right now, sometimes we're stymied into inaction, because we think, well, what can one person do? And the best thing is stop being one person. And so Brad did this in his community, and it sounds like a very, very inspiring.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, Lila said earlier about like Brad caring for his community. That sort of reminded me of when Brad was giving us a tour of his neighborhood. He talked about giving, like, cactus plants to new people who, like, either joined the neighborhood or got married or had a, like, kid, because, like, it was just sort of a way to connect them as a community, like, giving that little gift of, like, a plant.
Yeah. Well, plants and animals live in communities, and they depend on each other for survival, and that's what we need to do too, right?
Because we are very much a part of that community as well. Mm-hmm. We are not separate from nature, which unfortunately we sort of often see ourselves as.
That's right. Yeah.
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 Tying into what Ivy was saying, I think it ties into the third pillar of sustainability, in that it was really socially sustainable what he did. Like, it makes people want to be part of the community and even bring some of the ideas from Dunbar Springs neighborhood to their neighborhood.
Right.
I know it definitely, like, personally affected a lot of us when we saw that you could actually do it, and, like, when given the opportunity, it's actually quite easy, I guess, to, like, create that community.
Yeah, so it made me wonder if you guys envision anything like that in our community here in Silver City. Like, what sorts of things do you think could be done here?
I've actually heard of a project starting up. Is it in Hurley? Or,
yeah, I think so.
One of our students, their name is Micah. After we went to Brad's and he saw, like, how he was, I mean, he would cut
the sidewalk.
He would cut the sidewalk into shapes where the water would drain and water the plants, and it would also catch the trash. And I think that really, like, sparked Micah's idea of his neighborhood. I mean, I haven't been there myself, but he said that it was, like, destroyed and there was no wildlife, no, like, botanicals. And so I think they are moving one of the restoration groups to Hurley to begin that project of restoration.
Great.
Yeah.
So shout out Micah.
Anything else? Any other thoughts about other things we could do in this community to sort of take a step towards not just sustainability, but this whole idea of regenerating our land or making ourselves more food resilient?
I mean, what Carol's doing, that's pretty cool.
That's, like, a big step in order to, like, I mean, I remember growing up, like, going to Jose Barrios, and everyone would just, like, dump their trays and walk out the door, and no one cared, really, I guess. But now, like, hearing your stories of, like, they actually want to try and, like, sort their food and, like, they care, I think is really a giant step forward.
So I think there's, did all of you come? So you're talking about, Lila, the New Earth Project, where we focus on soil health and food security and carbon sequestration, of taking food leftovers from the school cafeterias and mixing it with shredded biomass from the forest, thinning projects, and making really healthy soil. And so did all of you come on that field trip?
Yes.
To see that? Yeah. So that's one big step. I'm glad that you're able to see that, and I know that some of you are wanting to be interns in the future, and we have high school students and graduates from this school working on that project with us too. So that's one step of many that I think we're taking here in Silver City for regeneration and restoration and sustainability.
And just to clarify for our listeners, the New Earth Project, one of the concepts is that we are collecting food waste from right now two school cafeterias, and we are composting it, as Caroline said, with some shredded woody biomass, and composting them in these fungally dominated compost bioreactors, which actually sequester carbon from the atmosphere. So not only are we trying to keep the waste out of the landfill, but we're also trying to create a fungally dominant amendment that will really help regenerate soil, actually build topsoil. And I wanted to ask you guys, so we're collecting food waste from two elementary schools right now, And I just wanted to see if you could maybe guess how many pounds of food waste do you think we might get in a day from two schools? And this is just the waste. This is just the things that the kids are not eating.
When we went up to Gila Woodnet, I think we weighed it and it was about 37 pounds. And that was like a light day.
Yeah, I think so. We generally, that was a light day. So from each school, like the Jose Barrios is a little bit smaller, but we can, just yesterday we got about 64 pounds from Jose Barrios and about 85 from Harrison Schmidt. So, you know, I mean, it's good food. They're all, you know, the meals are wonderful food, but sometimes there's just too much food. And so that's a level of action that we can take, is try not to take too much food. Only take what we can eat.
I think one of, sort of the question that sort of led this discussion was things that our community is doing. This is a very personal thing having to do with food, I guess, but Jim asked me to bring it up. I'm vegan, so I don't eat any dairy or meat or any animal products. And, you know, being vegan, it reduces your annual carbon footprint, like, by an entire ton of carbon, I think. Or, yeah, I think it's tons. That's how they measure it. I'm trying to think back to when we did that survey.
Oh, yeah, that was a cool thing we did in class, is we, just, like, they asked us simple questions about, like, dishes and things like that, and there was a survey of, like, how many tons around you produce per year, and then it showed you how many trees you would need to, like, counteract that.
Or how many Earths you would need if you, like, if everybody on planet Earth lived the way you do. We would need 4 Earths if everyone lived the way I do.
And I think if everybody lives the way Pete does, we would need 8. And it was just, I mean, it's crazy to see, like, an example right in front of you of, like, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. Well, our choices, like what we choose to eat every day, does make a difference, right? Because when we think about what it takes to, like, produce a piece of toast, yeah, the growing of the wheat, if it's not organic, the industrial chemicals, the fertilizers, the, you know, the farm machinery, and then the processing of the wheat, you know, it just goes on and on when you think about the industrialization of our food.
And then, like, I guess if you think about feeding that wheat or something else to an animal, so that the animal grows, so that, like, you have to feed the animal food and give it water and, like, shelter it from various things, and then you end up eating that animal, and it's a lot of extra steps in that process of production of food.
Our personal choices really can and do make a difference. So, Ivy, I'm interested. So you are a vegan. Is this something that is a recent decision, or have you been a vegan for a long time?
I've been vegan for a little over a year, but before that I was vegetarian for like 8 years.
And I'm interested in your, you know, your influencers and everyone else too. Do you have... in your life, were there certain people that were influencers, a teacher? Was it more of a lifestyle that you enjoyed? So how did you make that decision?
My mom has been vegetarian for a long time. She never really enjoyed eating meat growing up. So when she went to college, she was like, I'm vegetarian now. So I think when I was younger, I took a lot of inspiration for that. Mm-hmm. But then actually becoming vegan, I think the big step was visiting a farm animal sanctuary in Indiana. One of my mom's friends from college, they decided that instead of having kids or anything, they were going to just, like, have a ton of pets, but pets that were pigs and cows and chickens. And I guess there I sort of saw that being vegan didn't have to be super hard. Like, the people there had a cookbook, and, like, the sanctuary was called Uplands Peak Sanctuary in Freedom, Indiana, which I think is kind of funny because it's like freedom for the animals.
Are there any other of you that you have influencers in your lives that have been kind of played a role into your decisions for environmental restoration?
I mean, I guess this school.
Yeah, this school's a big definitely. One because right. we're so environmentally focused. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us have been here from 6th or 7th grade.
Yeah. So. I remember the first day I walked into the Aldo doors, we were still up by Burger King, and I saw that we had plastic trays. And I mean, I'd gone to Jose Barrio's 2nd through 5th grade where we just had our styrofoam tray and we dumped it. And I immediately was like, oh my gosh, there's not a pile of styrofoam trays in the trash. And like, it wow. takes 2 seconds to rinse off our plates. What is this? And I even remember as a 5th grader at Jose Barrio's one time, I brought it up to our principal. I was like, we waste so many trays. And he was like, yeah, but it's too hard to wash them. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, that reminds me of mm-hmm. my experiences at Stout, because there was one day, I guess we ran out of styrofoam trays, so they had us use paper. And I was like, wow, we're moving towards using paper trays. Like, a lot's happening here. And then the next day they were gone. The other thing, I think, with the public schools, like the washing the dishes. Mm-hmm. There was one time, I must have been in like 3rd grade, we had this spaghetti night. It was like after school. There was like a big spaghetti thing held by the PTA, Parent and Teacher Association, I guess. And the parents made like a ton of spaghetti in the kitchen. And then the staff got really mad because I guess, like, they don't normally use all those appliances. And so, like, even though they had cleaned everything, like, a lot of things had needed to be washed, even just to make, like, a big pot of spaghetti, which was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that at Aldo here you have washable trays. I know that in San Lorenzo they just got some washable trays. Mm-hmm. So that's really nice to hear. And I know that there are several other principals who want to move towards washable trays. Sometimes they're limited by funding and such, but we are noticing that that particular area could be improved on in schools. And so we're headed in that direction.
Yeah, because even though we're collecting the food waste and a lot of it, just within one lunch period, the actual garbage bags are changed out 2 or 3 times because they're just stuffed with those trays and other little plastic bags and cups and all sorts of plastic. So that's one change, one thing that could maybe happen in the public schools if people can figure out a way to make that happen. What do you guys think about something like a meatless Monday or just maybe one day a week in the cafeteria? I mean, for Ivy, and if we went here, we would love it, Carol Ann. But what about, do you think students would receive that well if there was a day when, maybe one day a week when meat wouldn't be served?
I think absolutely. I mean, as long as there's a different source of protein, I mean, we could even do that once a week rather than just like once a month or... It's definitely a good idea.
You know, not to trash the public school system again, but you know, when I went to Stout, I just wouldn't really eat the lunch there. Like, it was free and I could have, but there was nothing really there for me to eat. So there was days where I'd end up eating like 4 oranges because I would be really hungry, but then it was just like, steak. Yeah, like a big hot dog for lunch. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I'll just eat some oranges. So, I don't know. I feel like a meatless Monday would be good, but I think that it'd be nice if, like, every day there was an option, which that's kind of how it is at Aldo. There's a lot more options, but, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are really fortunate that you get the food that comes from the Montessori kitchen, which sometimes is food they've grown or locally sourced food or just, you know, it's...
good food.
Yeah, it's really cooked from scratch. And I think that the public school system, those lunches are just another sign of our whole sort of industrialization of food and the taking away kind of the local food market.
Something I really want to add on is, like, I think we're definitely not trying to bash it anyway, because, like, there's so many things that is wrong with it already that, like, it's out of our control. And, like, it's what they can do. And so it's not, it's like, in no way is it like bad, I guess. Cause like, I mean, I guess that might not be the right words, but like we can't, they just don't have an option maybe. So I think, and we do, and we're very fortunate to have that option, but like schools just, they might not have the funding or things like that. And I think it's really important to like, I don't want to like put off the message that we're like better than you guys because we compost or something like that, because it's really difficult to be able to get to where we are now, I think. And since we're so devoted to it, we found a way. But I mean,
Well, that's what I mean kind of by the industrialization. When you have to make food for 1,000 or 1,500 students, you know, you can't necessarily have a few people with some pots of pasta or so. You know, you need a much bigger scale, a lot of maybe pre-packaged food. But it is, it's something, it just seems like it's good to be aware of that, because, you know, this is nourishment and something that kids depend on to get through the day.
Yeah, I remember reading a long time ago, the whole public lunch thing comes from the Great Depression. They were just trying to designing those lunches and the production of them. Like, it was just getting calories to kids whose families didn't have the money to get food for the other two meals of the day. Mm-hmm. So it was like, let's give them, like, a really cheap, really calorie-dense meal so that they're not going to starve.
Yeah. Well, I think the New Earth Project is a really good example of, you know, we have identified areas of improvement, and we're grateful to be able to work on this project so that there can be improvement. And you know, I know that Nana and I are very appreciative of all the support that we get from the custodians and the principals and the teachers. You know, we all know that we need to head in this new direction. And so it's been very, they've been very welcoming. So we're grateful for that.
And the kids, yeah. I mean, they want a compost.
Right.
After the first few days, they were like, no, tell me where to, I want my food to become something else. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. We're also on the web at gmcr.org. And this is New Earth Kids. This is part of the Kindred Continuum series. And right now we are talking with 5 ninth graders from Aldo Leopold High School about environmental science.
I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about your restoration projects that you were doing. We were talking about some of the work that you have done out at Waterworks. And are there other locations that you have gone to?
Not us 5 personally, but the entire high school is split into 3 different groups. One of them goes to Waterworks. One of them is supposed to be going to Signal Peak, but that might be the one group that they're moving to Hurley. And then the other group
is working at the San Vicente Farms.
Oh, yeah. And then the other group is working at San Vicente Farms.
Yeah.
So amongst the high school, it's spread out, and we're all getting to learn different things about different places and helping contribute towards a bigger goal.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's really nice.
So it seems like climate change is a big issue now. I mean, we're seeing a lot of effects of climate change, and it looks like we need to make some changes ourselves in order to kind of mitigate this. How do you guys see climate change is affecting you personally?
Well, I am a scuba diver, and when I first got my certificate, I was really excited. Like, ever since I was little, I've always imagined, like, big reefs just filled with color and life, and, like, I've been researching more and more, and those almost don't exist, and it's so sad to me that, like, I've had this idea ever since I was a little girl about, like, these great, big, colorful, like, full of life, and they're almost gone now. And it hasn't, like, it took so little time to completely diminish that. And I mean, that's like something like, oh no, poor me, I don't get to see the great colors. But it's not just like the fact that I don't get to see them, but it's, they're not there.
Right. Yeah. Just home to all sorts of life and diversity in the ocean.
And it's, I mean, it's not just in the ocean. It's like, obviously what I'm saying is just in the ocean. Sorry, cut that out. But it's not just in the ocean, it's everywhere. I mean, things are just less vibrant now.
you know, the whole, like, sort of climate change being, like, a huge problem, it reminds me of the beginning of the year, where our class, we laid out the 17 UN Sustainable Development Goals. We each got 5 pennies, and we chose which goals we wanted to, like, invest our pennies in. And I think the number one for our class was climate action, because I think our class especially, like, realizes that that's a huge issue, and if we want a world to live in, then it needs to be solved, I guess.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just something, I think it has been, like, every class, the amount of people that puts pennies on climate change has grown. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing that the last class, only a couple people put their pennies on, and the class before that, it was even less. And so it's, like, mm-hmm. I mean, we're finally getting some good education on the topic, because it's a big problem now. But also, like, it's becoming more and more of a problem. So,
yeah.
There is a global climate strike on March 3rd of this year. And so, pre-pandemic, there were some demonstrations at Gough Park. And so we are thinking of, my husband and I are thinking of reviving these strikes and demonstrations. And so I know some students who might want to participate in that, because, you know, it raises awareness. And I think that demonstrations can be very powerful, and it shows that students like you really do care about your future, and you want to take action and contribute to solutions.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I think one of the reasons demonstrations are really important is, like, climate change, and, like, earlier we were talking about the food in our public school system. Those things are controlled by people who are kind of separated from us. They're at a much higher level, and so we need to show them what we want and what we need, because they control mm-hmm. things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's cool that you guys have talked about economic sustainability, because a lot of people argue that in order to fuel the economy, we need to keep a lot of the status quo going, right? Which sort of puts us in that, on that trajectory towards more climate change. But, you know, you guys are looking at solutions for how to have economic sustainability without having those implications, right? I mean, yeah. What do you guys think are some of the most, I mean, we've talked about diet change, we've talked about composting, we've talked about using materials we have. What are other ways that we can mitigate climate change that you think are really maybe doable in this community?
I mean, education, because it's not a direct act upon climate change, but the more people know about it and the more that they learn, I mean, it'll just spread like a wildfire. That's not funny. I'm sorry. But if we educate, I mean, younger classes, older classes, everyone, it'll make a big difference.
Yeah, I think we especially need to bring it to the elementary schools, because I remember during my entire time at Stout, the elementary school, I don't think we talked about climate change more than twice in the 6 years. So it needs to be more widespread, these ideas, to younger kids, so that it's just an idea that's already in their minds. They need to be sustainable.
Yeah, you know, climate education can be a very difficult topic for teachers. Many times they say that they don't have the knowledge that they need in order to teach it. But that's starting to change, because as the impacts of climate change are being more prevalent in our community and throughout the world, we know that it needs to be discussed and taught. And so that is something that is being changed. But I'd like to know that you think that education is really important, because that's the foundation.
Yeah. I mean, when I went to Stout, I know that I had a teacher who just outright denied climate change, which is really upsetting, because obviously climate change exists. There's plenty of scientific evidence that it's happening, and it's happening really quickly. And to think that, like, that group of, like, 90 students just keeps going, with that idea that their teacher taught them that climate change doesn't exist, because it's really sad because we trust our teachers, and I think that that's really important. Teachers are really great. It's really hard to deal with a class of 20 kids or more.
Knowing what you know now with the challenges of our environment, how does this impact your decisions for maybe the next 5 years of your life or the next 10 years or even some of the occupational goals that you might have for yourself? Does it influence those decisions or your way of thinking?
Absolutely. I mean, me myself, I'm thinking about meteorology, which can connect to environmental science. And I mean, it's just of bringing it back to education. It's like the more you know. The more we learn, the easier it's going to be for us to pass on that information and make changes to our everyday lives.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think like anxiety about the climate crisis is something that's becoming more and more common, especially around younger generations, because sometimes I'll think about, you know, what I want to do as an adult. And it's hard to think about that and then realize, well, 30 years from now, there's plenty of places that'll like be underwater and jobs will be, the entire world will be sort of
changed,
becoming more chaotic if something doesn't happen. The opportunities, I guess it's sad to think that the life that I'd like to live might not be an option anymore because of the way that our world is heading.
Yeah.
And I think climate change has a solid, like, mental health impact on a lot of younger generations, including ours. Just, you know, growing up with the threat of climate change and the fact that it doesn't always seem like there's a lot being done to prevent it.
I mean, it's scary going from, like, being little kids and hearing about climate change and, oh, no, if we don't do something soon, like, we're never going to be able to turn back. And now hearing people being like, well, we can't turn back. Like, we've got to start taking carbon out of the atmosphere rather than just, like,
cutting emissions.
Rather than just cutting emissions, like, now we have gone too far and we can't take it back.
Well, and that's our whole take, too, that with the New Earth Project, like, we just want to be a positive force. I mean, what's done is done, and it's unfortunate that things have gotten to this point, but also here we are. And so we just really wanted to take this regenerative stance, and we're just doing our best.
And I think that you all would agree with me. I certainly find that making positive change is so therapeutic.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I hope I'm looking forward to working with all of you on various projects, and because we can take action, and as you saw in Tucson, even one person can make a big difference.
Yeah.
It's just, I guess, thinking about, like, I don't know, like a normal life. Like, I could go on, I could go to college, I could get a job and everything, but by doing all of that, I would pretty much be continuing to, like, hurt our climate and our Earth. So, like, thinking about climate change, I think what's sort of scary is that it's gotten to the point where people feel like they have to start sacrificing their way of life. They can't just go on and, like, have a house and have a family. They need to be advocating for the climate and solutions. And it's just scary to think about how long is that going to take.
Yes. Yeah. I'd like to remind our listeners, you're listening to KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. And we're also on the web at gmcr.org. And this is New Earth Kids. And we just have a little bit of time left with these brilliant freshmen at Aldo Leopold High School, really enjoying this conversation about our world and the positive change that we can make. I have a question. You guys really studied these UN sustainability goals. And one kind of caught my eye, goal number 5. It says, achieve gender equality and empower all women and girls. Why do you think the UN included this concept in their sustainability goals?
I think that equality between every person, whether they're a man or a woman or non-binary or whatever, is an important thing to promote because we're all humans, we all live on Earth, we all experience a lot of the same things, and we all deserve an equal chance at life.
Well, as you're talking, it makes me think of, I mean, when we think of a healthy community is made up of healthy individuals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the more we support each other, the healthier we all are.
It makes me think sort of about like diverse ecosystems. You know, an ecosystem or environment is stronger when it has lots of different types of plants and animals, because if one of them dies or gets hurt, then like there's other things to support the ecosystem. I think by having like a diverse political, by having diverse leaders, we're sort of adding to the resilience of our communities and country.
I think that's a great example of, you know, there's biological diversity and ecosystems, and there's social diversity.
Yeah.
And that's a good example of that.
Yeah, and you're only as strong as your weakest link.
Right?
So
that's right.
Why not? You should always support the people who have been...
I don't know, never mind.
It's the same way. It's really difficult to be able to achieve these goals, and I think in no way we're not trying to like put people down for not being able to, because like they don't have the money to, and it's like it's a really hard thing to achieve. So I really don't want to be like, y'all are bad and we're better than you, because maybe our school has the money to like put towards those things.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
right.
And like our, maybe our families are more devoted to those things than others, and like they just have a lot going on, and it can't always be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not all people have access
to
fresh food.
Right, exactly.
Fresh water, clean water, and it's really a question of environmental justice.
Yeah.
It's a big part of it.
And being able to be like environmentally sustainable is kind of a privilege.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, because I don't want people to hear this and be like, wow, and they just think that like we aren't doing it because we don't want to, but in reality, maybe they can't.
Yeah.
People can't, and I don't know.
I think that was one of the things that was like brought up at Brad's, is that Brad saved up the money to like buy himself a plot of land and make all these renovations to his house, and a lot of people can't afford to do that for a lot of reasons.
Right.
And or that's just not what they're going to spend their money on. Because some people have kids to feed and, like, jobs to work, and they just don't have time. But, like I said, being sustainable is a privilege. And we're hoping that we can make it to a point where it isn't anymore. It's, like, a right.
I think, like, the bigger picture of, like, it's not... I mean, it's all based on the people, but we have to be able to make it sustainable for them. To be able to like live the life that is comfortable enough and that they feel like they can like contribute to the like sustainability and stuff like that.
And I think, I mean, coming like going along with that, I really admire how environmentally focused Aldo Leopold is as a school, because I mean, we don't have to be, we can spend our money on other stuff, but I appreciate being able to go to a place where, I mean, me personally, I don't spend all my time thinking about the environment, but I'm able to come to a school where we kind of do. And so then it makes me feel like I'm playing a bit more of a part in the solution. And if we can bring more like environmental climate change education to schools, that will hopefully, I mean, to an extent, fill the like, I don't want to say void, but that feeling of, wow, I'm really not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I think it's important that no one ever really feels like guilty for anything that they do, like guilty for driving a car or eating meat. Those are things that they're very convenient, and they're things, eating meat, hunting, things like that. Those are things people enjoy, and it's important to do things that you enjoy.
And that brings in also, like Dara was saying earlier, you know, that's why the education is so important, because, you know, so we can all make informed choices, and then there are choices, and we're fortunate to have them. All right. Well, I want to thank you all so much for this really enlightening conversation. And Keanu, Lila, Dara, Asa, and Ivy, thank you guys so much for all you're doing and for educating us on your projects and your views. And we just really appreciate you spending this time with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you so much, Carolyn Fugali, for being my co-host for this episode of New Earth Kids. My name is Nan Franzblau, and we also want to thank our listeners. This is New Earth Kids, part of the Kindred Continuum series. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to New Earth Kids, part of the Kindred Continuum series on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico. We'd like to thank the New Earth Project for sponsoring this show and KURU General Manager Marcus Hansen for his ongoing support. May we all continue to listen, learn, and grow together. Bye now.